They're all in behind the gate. The gate swings into the stretch, and here they come. They're horsing around.
Welcome to Horsing Around. We got a great show for you this week. I'm Michelle Gatchel, joined by my co-host Kelly Bell, and our first guest is John Scott of John Scott Productions and Motion Picture Animals in Canada. And let me tell you, folks, he is one of the world leader in horse training for films. So, gosh, Kelly and I had so much fun talking to him, I can't even tell you all the cool stories, but this is our second installment of that interview. We're going to start off with me asking him about one of the hardest things that he had to get a horse to do for a film.
The hardest thing I had to do was a show with Jackie Chan called Shanghai Noon. The horse has to pick up a whiskey bottle, and he has to drink out of it, and then he has to stagger away like he's drunk. And Jackie Chan staggers away like he's drunk. So that was way above my training, but I'd seen a gentleman in Montreal that was holding a xylophone in his hand, and the horse was playing the xylophone with his nose. So I thought, well, that's the guy I got to get. So I got hold of him, brought him out. He didn't speak much English, but we worked it out, and we started working with this horse with different bottles, and some of the lips on them weren't big enough for them to grab a hold of, and others, we wound up making a Coke bottle, and then we had to block the bottle, so when he lifted it up, all the fluid didn't go down his throat, and he dropped the bottle. And just repetition, and we finally got it, so that the horse could handle the bottle and drink out of the bottle and make it all happen.
Is that one of your horses you still have?
No, I don't have the horse anymore. His name was Fido because he had to do everything that the dog did. And a fellow called Claude Chassé is the fellow that trained him to do that because he had also got a horse show called Mustang. And he trained Mustang to swing a twirling lariat with his mouth. And then he also puts Mustang up on a pedestal, and there's two dogs come running in. They jump right between his legs on the pedestal, and he stands on top swinging this rope. So it's just a lot of smart horsemanship, I guess is what it is, and that's why I got a guy like that to help do the training on that horse.
So who are some other animal trainers you collaborated with for movies?
Like Doug Seuss. Another one is Sled Reynolds out of Hollywood. He trains cats and wolves, and he had the wolves on Dances with Wolves. And his dad was quite a trainer, and he was a rodeo clown and that. But I've got a picture of his dad riding a giraffe in traffic with his briefcase under his arm like he's going to work. And I got another picture of him where he's got a pair of sheep on the wheel team of a wagon, and he's got a lion and a bear in front of the two sheep hooked together. He's got muzzles on the bear. I don't think he had a muzzle on the lion. But to try and do that these days, or try and put that together these days, is just, they'd laugh at you for one thing, so you couldn't do it for another. But with all the rules with American Humane and animal rights, PETA and everything else, you wouldn't stand a chance to do something like that.
Yeah.
But those days, those guys were characters, and they wanted to make an act that was entertaining and try and outdo the other guy. And they came up with some fantastic things. And something like that is just amazing to me.
John, your life is amazing to us, gosh. And rightly so, someone has made a documentary about this amazing life that you're leading.
Tell us a little bit about this film. It came out just this past year. They've been showing it at some of the film festivals. I believe it won a People's Choice Award, among others. Can you fill us in about the documentary?
Well, they came to me and said they'd like to do a bit of a story on me. I said, well, okay, we'll see if we can help you do something. And so they kind of took it from the beginning to pretty much the end of what I've done in all the different aspects of horses in the film business and the movie business over the years and things like that. And it's called True West because I I am going to win an award with the Oklahoma Cowboy Hall of Fame about for preservation of Western heritage. So that's what I've been doing for years and years, is trying to preserve the Old West and make things look right when we do a Western movie, if it's going back in time, and things like that. And then I become critical of other wranglers. You know, like white leghorn chickens never came into about 1937 or 47. So if a guy uses a white leghorn chicken in an 1880s movie, I think, well, he didn't do his homework and he didn't do a very good job. So simple things like that that I guess attract wranglers and trainers, but the average public doesn't know and they probably don't care. But that's kind of the story, how the ranch came together, how it started, how my grandfather homesteaded it and worked with teams and horses and built everything and moved it around with teams. And that's where I got to learn a lot of knowledge about the teams and continued on from there. And that's what helped me in the film business quite a bit.
And are you breeding your own horses to get that special blend to be on the movie sets?
No, I did that years ago, but it was such a slow process and it took so long, and quite often those colts would get into wire or get cut when they're twos and threes. And I just found it was easier to try and find a basic horse that's got the background and got the right attitude, and then you work with him and try and improve him and his attitude and his thoughts.
One thing we wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned you have three things coming up this summer. What are those three movies?
One's a show about Billy the Kid.
Cool.
Western Outlaw. And another one is... it's for home box office. I don't really know what the horses are going to do on that yet. It's early stages. It's just coming in to shoot this summer. And another one is a Disney show that's got some native horses on it. And there's a great show coming in the fall. It's called Call to Glory. It's about the Texas Rangers. And it's a very good script and very good show. It's taken off a book.
Yeah. So you get to see the scripts and everything because you got to get the horses ready for those lines, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. You've got to figure out what horses to put where and try and see what the actors are going to be like and what kind of horse they can get along with and what they have to do. And sometimes I work with wardrobe to kind of coordinate the color of the wardrobe in order to make the horse have the same color or not have the same color.
You know, in working with these horses, do you find that some, I don't want to say are prima donnas, but, you know, when you hit that set, they know they're on.
Yeah, there's some horses really like the business, and other horses can't handle it. Especially, you know, with radios, they get very smart. So when they hear action come over the radio, they get ready to rock and roll. And
absolutely.
Then sometimes they just get too much of that, and you've got to take them away and take them back to the ranch and just ranch ride them for a while so their mind can settle down.
How does the timeline and the staffing and the organization work on these types of projects?
Well, usually if you get on a big feature like a Disney feature or MGM or Warner Brothers feature, you're given maybe 4 months in advance to be able to figure out what you're going to do and what you're going to need. Television moves a lot faster. We've got a show up here we've been doing for 15 years. It's called Heartland.
Yeah.
And it's about a young horse whisperer girl. That is very, very tough because the writers see stuff on the internet or something like that, and people have trained a horse for 2 years to get what those people are seeing, and they expect us to do that like in 2 weeks. And a lot of times it's impossible.
All right. Thanks, John. You know, he was so interesting to talk to. We're going to share some more of that interview next week. Coming up next, Kelly goes out to the track to hear about a new little filly that you're going to want to pay attention to. We'll be right back.
It's mud season. Are you looking for a fix in a muddy situation? Cashman's has you covered, offering innovative mud control solutions. We are also your number one source for the best deals on rubber mats for multi-use flooring, perfect for horse stalls, garages, and gyms. Cashman's Horse Equipment has been serving the equine community for over 40 years. Come and visit our location in Delaware, Ohio, and shop over 10 acres of equine farm and livestock supplies. Shop online anytime at cashmans.com.
Be sure to catch the new podcast, The Top of the Stretch, presented by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. The podcast keeps fans of racing in the Buckeye State up to date on various topics concerning the sport of harness racing. The news and views of top officials, owners, trainers, drivers, and breeders in Ohio. That's the all-new podcast, Top of the Stretch, on the Facebook page of the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Be there!
Looking for that special gift for the horse lover in your life? Bow River Jewelry provides custom-made designs using state-of-the-art equipment, hand finishing, and quality stones to ensure your jewelry reflects that love of horses. Bow River Jewelry creates 14-karat gold rings, bracelets, and watches that uniquely exemplify the mutual love between horses and humans. Contact them at bowriverjewelry.com to see the variety of horse-inspired jewelry available or call 888-860-7483 with custom inquiries.
Welcome back to Horsin' Around. I'm Michelle Gatchel. My co-host Kelly Bell is out at the Delaware County Fairgrounds track, and she is currently with Mike Walker, a driver who has a filly attending baby school out there learning how to run behind a starting gate. And he's going to kind of share some information with us about how you name a horse and also a little bit about how you pick a sire, because there's many different versions, and this current filly that he has is the first of the line from a winning horse, but I'll let you hear the story. I'm going to send it on out to Kelly at the track.
Hey folks, this is Kelly Bell. I am out here on the track at Delaware. It's baby school day, and I'm here with Mike Walker. Mike, what is one of these horses out here you told me is one of the Fear the Dragon babies?
By the first crop of Fear the Dragon.
Now tell me a little bit more about this.
She is a filly that they picked up at the select sale.
Mm-hmm.
She is a half sister to Rocket Baby and Johnny Rocket and Trey Rocket. So far she's been a dandy filly since day one. She's very smart. She's won second out from the rail.
Oh, look at her. You can just see Champion all over this colt. Wow.
See the nice snug hold he's got of her?
Oh.
She likes to go.
Yeah. Yeah. She's beautiful. I called her a colt. Philly. Shame on me. Well, okay. For folks that don't necessarily follow harness racing very closely, can you tell us a little bit about breeding? Why is it being a filly out of Fear the Dragon important?
Well, you have studs and fillies by a sire, and some of your sires, the colts will be better than the fillies. Some of your sires, the fillies will be better than the colts. Other sires, it doesn't make a difference. It just depends on what clicks and what doesn't.
Can you tell us a little bit about Fear the Dragon and why that name is so important?
Fear the Dragon was a very, very good racehorse. Went over $1 million. I believe he had a record around 48 or 49. He's a very tough racehorse. He was trained by Brian Brown, and David Miller drove him most of the time. David loved him. So it's very important. He's got a pretty nice select bunch of mares, and looks like he's, from the word that I've heard, other guys is having very good luck with them. They're training down nice and they look good.
Now, is this the first year for colts and fillies with Fear the Dragon, or has he been studying for a while?
No, this is his first crop. His oldest foals are two-year-olds to race this summer.
So, you know, that's one of the tricky things about going to the select sales and trying to choose babies to be racehorses. You know that some of the dams and sires are proven. Generally, the ones that have the better records get the higher price for the babies. But then you don't necessarily know if those babies are going to pan out. I mean, it doesn't always work out that way.
Absolutely. You can take the one with the fastest record and the most money. May not be a good sire. You can take one that's just so-so. If the pedigree is there, even though maybe they sustained an injury during their racing career and it shortened their career, they still may end up being a top sire. Mm-hmm.
So I think it was Doc Mossenberger that said you just tried to breed the best with the best and hope for the best.
Exactly.
I love that line.
Breed speed to speed and hopefully you end up with faster.
There you go. Now, this particular filly out there, you said that she's like really intelligent as well as fast. Yes. And what we're seeing today is that she doesn't seem to be afraid of the gate and she really likes to go.
Yes, the very first time I sat behind her, Ronnie took her probably for the first month. The very first time I sat behind her, Ronnie said, jog her a mile and a half the wrong way and a mile and a half the right way. When I turned her at the quarter pole to go the right way, just felt like a horse going to the gate. Just she was that smart, that quick. Oh, she's very smart.
And, you know, some horses, you can train them, put a lot of time and money into them, and then at the end of the day, they just don't really have the heart of an athlete.
Exactly.
But that's what you're telling me. This one has that heart.
She's got that heart.
You know,
she doesn't make it, it'll be a shock to me.
And what's her name again?
Her name is Fear the Rockette.
Fear the Rockette. You know, that's something interesting, too, that a lot of people might not know about, is that often the names of the sires are related in the names of every crop of babies. Yeah. So Fear the Dragon, Fear the Rockette. So folks, make note of this one, because when you're out at the county fair this year with the kids, if you see Fear the Rockette out there, you might want to take a close look at this filly.
Yes, you will. She's a very nice filly.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Have a great day.
You too.
Stay right there, or as our next guest would say, be there. Roger Houston is joining us, and he's got a news update for you about the harness racing world. So we'll be right back.
Looking for your next quality standard bred racehorse? Look no further than Sugar Valley Farm in Delaware, Ohio. Sugar Valley Farm offers stud services anywhere in the world, providing the best stallions available at any price point. With a stallion roster full of names like Well Said, Lather Up, Mr. Wiggles, and Down by the Seaside, winning must be in the water. For more info, call 1-740-363-5618. That's 1-740-363-5618 for Sugar Valley Farm.
With more than 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is over $1.4 billion. Much of that value comes from standardbred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing. The mission of the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standardbred industry in Ohio and beyond. To learn more about the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association, go to OHHA.com.
Welcome back to Horsing Around. I'm Michelle Gatchel. Up next, we have Roger Houston, brand ambassador for the Ohio Harness Horsemen Association, giving us an update on harness racing in the Buckeye State. Tossing it out to you, Roger.
Harness racing is well underway here in the Buckeye State. During the month of March at Miami Valley, they had four late-closing series events for immortals in harness racing at Old Lebanon Raceway. The Ray Paver Sr. Memorial went to Miss Smead, a four-year-old mare by Guccio, in 155-3 for trainer-driver Don Esch. The Herb Coven Jr. Memorial went to Keystone Eureka, a four-year-old mare by Some Beach Somewhere. Trace Tietrich drove for trainer Ryan Miller, the time 1:52. The George Williams Memorial was won by Ham Sandwich, Trace Tietrich for Adam Short in 1:52-3. Ham Sandwich is a four-year-old gelding by Tell It Like It Is. And the Dr. Dan Farwick Memorial went to the four-year-old mare Kiki Mora by Triumphant Caviar, Brett Miller, the driver, Chris Beaver, the trainer, in 1:54-1. Had some mighty fast miles here in the Buckeye State in March. The fastest, the initial two-minute performance in harness racing in the Buckeye State, was turned in by Opportune Hanover, a four-year-old gelding by Dragon Again, Chris Page drove for trainer Ron Burke, and the timer stopped at 1:49 4/5, the first sub-2-minute mile in Ohio. Also at Miami Valley on the trot, Lane of Stone had the fastest trotting mile, 1:53.1 for Tyler Smith and trainer Mark Winters. The 5-year-old stallion is by Wishing Stone. At Northfield, the fastest mile was turned in by a 5-year-old gelding by Sweet Lou by the name of Smooth Lou in 1:50.1 for driver Ronnie Wren and trainer Ron Burke. On the trot, the fastest was Jogging to the Bank, a 1:54.3 effort by the 6-year-old gelding by Break the Bank K. Kurt Sugg was driving for trainer Marty Woolham. Drivers and trainers still racking up big numbers in the national scene. Aaron Merriman continues to lead all drivers with 179 wins, doing double duty both at the Meadows and Northfield. Trace Tietrich is second with 138. He doubled duties Miami Valley and Hoosier Park. Tony Hall, also double duty from the Meadows and Northfield, is third with 135 wins. In the fourth spot, racing both at the Meadows and Northfield, Ronnie Wren Jr., 132. Dan Noble, who races solely at Miami Valley, is sixth with 115. And Brett Miller, also racing at Miami Valley, 107 wins, good for the eighth spot in North America's top 10. As far as the trainers are, or the drivers are concerned, I should say, for money won, four drivers at Miami Valley have now topped the $1 million in earnings mark for 2021. Quite a feat. Trace Tietrich leads with $1,221,651, also hitting the $1 million mark. Dan Noble, Brett Miller, and Chris Page. Tyler Smith came up a bit short, but he'll be the next million-dollar performer, ninth in North America, with $919,012. By the way, Tietrich is first, Noble is second, Brett Miller fourth, Aaron Merriman up at Northfield is fifth in that earnings category with $1,053,000, and Chris Page is in the seventh spot. As far as trainers are concerned, the perennial leader in North America is Ron Burke, and he's right there again in 2021 with 177 wins and earnings of $1,935,140 for the top spot. Meanwhile, at Northfield, Sam Shalachi has 50 wins for third. In fourth place is Brian Loney with 48. And last year's winningest trainer at Northfield, Bill Rhodes, is fifth with 44. Tyler George is in the top 10, racing both at Hoosier and Miami Valley, has 38 wins for the year, and his earnings is good for sixth in North America at $433,247. The breeding farms, well, each year it's Hanover Shoe Farms. This year they're on top again, 561 starters with $3.1 million in earnings. Midland Acres is in the sixth spot in North America for breeding establishments, 70 starters. Their horses have won $482,801. And that wraps up our report from the Ohio Harness Horsemen Association, Brand Ambassador Roger Houston.
All right, and that wraps up our show. Thanks, Roger, for that update. We'll see you next week right here on Horsin' Around.